From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Happy Monday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Coming up at 11:33, we have good news. And what I mean by good news is I get the chance to tell you why I am encouraged. Maybe I'll share with you a bunch of the emails that I got this past weekend, but I'm encouraged. And I'm encouraged because I know that going forward, there is about to be a mobilization of the good in humanity. That will continue forward. But right now, let's get to the show.
And G, in the midst of all the darkness the last couple of days, there were sparks of hope. And one of the most remarkable things I saw was in the middle of yesterday's protests and rioting in Bellevue. And I actually started crying only in that it was one of those moments where you see where people listen and there's hope. And that was when Police Chief Steve Mylett joined hundreds of protesters in the middle of the street and got down on one knee and he shared his heart and he listened. And people in the crowd were shouting that they wanted to see action, and he continued to listen.
I don't want anybody to look at what I represent, the uniform I wear or the color of my skin in this uniform, and fear that I'm going to harm you, because I'm not going to.
And he went on to share his cell phone number with some of the protesters. You know, he told them, we are with you. We understand. We condemn what happened to George Floyd. We condemn those other officers for standing by. We are doing what we can. We want you to know that we are your servants, that we want you to feel safe. We don't want you to fear us. He also made sure that to clarify that he supported the protesters who were exercising their right to free speech and their First Amendment rights. But he also made clear very early on that what was happening with the looting and the violence and the people who were just, you know, who ransacked Bellevue Square and who you know, did the damage to strip mall businesses, that those were not the people who were doing the right thing or trying to really move forward from what has happened and trying to make the positive change that we need. We are expecting him to join us soon in just a couple of minutes, G, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what you felt when you saw that, when the police chief did that.
Selfishness. I was going to
out. The police chief.
Ursula, yeah, let me finish. I had a point that I was going to. Selfishness in the way of I was going to reach out and call out to him myself. I was not going. I didn't even want to interview him. I wanted to call and I was going to go and set up because I just wanted to know why. I wanted to know why he had that type of thought process to do that. What encouraged him to do that? What was so different about this moment that made him do that? What was his thoughts of when he saw the George Floyd situation and he started to see all of the problems that was happening throughout of our country? So what I mean by selfishness as in I didn't really want to interview him for the show. I wanted to actually reach out to him and go sit down with him and find out. That's what I mean by selfishness. And so when I saw that you guys were going to have Chief Mylett on the show, I was like, okay, perfect. This is great. I'm upset that we can't talk to him for 2 hours. I feel like it's an injustice that we only probably get to talk to him for 15 minutes. So I don't know. I hope we can get a lot. But I just am so looking forward to asking him why, Ursula.
Well, and one of the things that happened early on in yesterday when we first heard, oh, my gosh, now they're moving to Bellevue. And by the way, they also there were also groups that were ransacking businesses in Tukwila and in Renton. But when we first heard that, it was like, okay, I can't remember any time in my time as a reporter or any time here at Cairo. When was the last time there was a riot in Bellevue where they have had to, you know, and clearly at the very beginning, the officers were outnumbered. I mean, there was a, and Mylett, as Chief Mylett said, These were organized gangs. They knew, like, the night before that they had been organizing this, and there was going to be, you know, a lot of people showing up to do no good. But the sheer number of people who showed up initially, they were all over the place. And, you know, the officers, you know, had a hard time, you know, responding to wherever it was. But at some point, they were able to get it under control. And, you know, Chief Milette, it was just really a remarkable moment. And I want to share some of the other things that were said as we wait for him. But this is what he said when he got down on one knee.
What happened to George Floyd was wrong. It was a crime. The officers that were involved need to go to prison. For justice for George Floyd and the entire African-American community. We're with you. We are with you. We are not against you. I'm telling you, the vast majority of law enforcement, and I can tell you 100% here in Bellevue, when we saw it, we condemned the behavior. We make sure that that is never going to happen here. We embrace all of you.
So go ahead.
The most important currency that a police officer can have is trust in the community. And though now I'm probably not talking to those that are in their 20s right now. I'm talking to those to 35 plus. Do you guys remember back in your day coming up? Remember your neighborhood police officer? I know I did. Even though my dad was a police officer, my dad to me was not the neighborhood police officer. The neighborhood police officer was Officer Parks. Officer Parks used to always have lollipops and candy for the kids. I loved Officer Parks. But what I mean by that is if you really want, well, as a matter of fact, we had a caller, a listener that called in at our show. He kind of talked about that, talked about what happened post 9/11 and talking about some of the things that happened with the militarization of police forces around the country. Well, we need that community police officer. And so yesterday when I heard the Chief Milette doing what he was doing, I thought, yes, that's it. Actual conversation with the community, Ursula.
And I'm happy to say that we do have Police Chief Steve Milette on the phone line with us now. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning, Ursula. Good morning, G.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Talk to
Thanks
us
for having me.
About what you did yesterday and why you reacted the way you did.
You know, it was, you know, how do I explain it? I'm not even sure I can explain it. I saw an opportunity. I was stepping back from having dealt with the criminal element that was not there to honor George Floyd, or they had no interest in advancing civil rights or anything like that. And we can talk a little bit more about it. But, and then I came to this crowd, and then I started listening to Raz. And the conversation that they were having, and I saw the emotion, I saw the anger, I saw the frustration, and I saw an opportunity to engage. And because number one, I felt like I would have been welcomed into the group, and it was an opportunity. And as I was actually standing and talking to the captain, just getting a briefing on the activities of the group, because it was a rather large group, and he pointed to this young woman that was just staring at me, and he said, "Chief, she has been a voice of reason, and I think, you know, she's really been, you know, keeping the conversation from turning violent and focused on, you know, what we need to hear directly." And I'm paraphrasing a little bit. And so I just, you know, I decided that I needed to give her a hug. And so I walked in, approached her, and she allowed me. And I'm very grateful that I was able to get that opportunity and that honor. Chief, and then it started the conversation.
Chief, let me first start off by saying I appreciate you, man. What I saw out of you yesterday, I'm grateful for it. And I want to tell you thank you first.
Thank you.
The next thing I want to ask you, what have you learned this week?
You know, I've been on this mission since I was a police officer. in Corpus Christi. I started in Corpus. My father was a New York City police officer. He just passed away a couple of weeks ago. And I remember I'm the seventh son of seven sons. And when I went into police work, my father pulled me aside and he said, son, remember this. The motto in the New York City Police Department's training academy when he went in, it was at your service. You serve everybody. Doesn't matter what they look like, doesn't matter who they love, doesn't matter. And this is, you know, back in the 1980s, and that stuck with me. And I have seen injustices in my career, and every opportunity that I have to use whatever influence I have to overcome those and change it, I do. And, you know, gee, I've been hearing, I mean, we've all been hearing for the last how many years that we need to have this conversation. And I get frustrated because when are we going to have it? Mm-hmm. You know, we have a tragic event happen, and then we rally, we start talking, and then all of a sudden, 3 years later, here's another event, and the conversations have not had. They haven't happened. And, you know, I mourn the loss of George Floyd. I do. I've watched that video several different times, but a few days ago, I looked at his face. Mm-hmm. And I saw this man gasping for air, pleading with the officer to let him breathe, calling out his mother's name. And I'm not embellishing this. I welled up, and I started to cry because I'm watching a man lose his life at the hands of somebody that represents something that should be the exact opposite. And then I got angry, and I'm still angry. And I think, as tragic as George's loss of life is, I'm hoping that what comes out of this is something good. And you're seeing, at least, you know, what I'm seeing on television are police officers, black, white, Latino, Asian, male, female, straight, gay, embracing the people who are coming down to raise their voices and express their anger and their frustration and their hurt. And you've seen chiefs of police. I saw it last night when I got home. This image of several chiefs of police taking a knee in solidarity with the crowd. And in my view, if we don't seize upon this opportunity to start that stinking conversation that should have been happening for the last several decades, then shame on us. Mm-hmm. All of us. All of us.
Chief, I want to read a quote from a book by former Seattle Police Chief Norm Stamper, and these words are going to be painful. I want to read it, and I want to get your response. He says, simply put, white cops are afraid of black men. We don't talk about it. We pretend it doesn't exist. We claim colorblindness. We say white officers treat black men the same way they treat white men, but that's a lie. In fact, the bigger, the darker the black man, the greater the fear. The African-American community knows this. Hell, most whites know it. Yet even though it is a central, if not the defining ingredient in the makeup of police racism, white cops won't admit it to themselves or to others. It's hard to even say those words. But
when
I just
did he write that?
In a book, his book, Top Cops, Exposé of the Dark Side of American Policing.
What year was that? Is that like recent or is that?
I think this has been this might be. I don't have an exact date.
It was about 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
So, I can. That's not my experience, and you know, I don't know Chief Stamper personally, and you know, I'm not going to criticize his position or anything like that. At least in my experience, and the officers that I've worked with, I have not seen that. What I will tell you, over the last several years, many police departments around the country, not all, and maybe his words are true in some pockets, but not the pockets that I operate in. I can tell you over the last several years, there has been such a focus on implicit bias, on social justice, procedural justice. And for the first time in my career, probably within the last 3 or 4 years, I've seen police officers opening up and willing recognize that we've made a lot of mistakes historically, and we need to fix them. And I see officers going into what, when I first started in 1989, you know, I would imagine veteran officers going into some of this training like, are you kidding me? This is touchy-feely stuff. I don't want to do this. Now we have officers that are embracing it, seeking it out, because they want to learn about everybody, and especially here in Bellevue, mm-hmm. where the you know, diversity is tremendous. So, you know, we're working hard to build those bridges into every community. And anytime something like this happens with that knucklehead moron criminal, Officer Chauvin, doing what he did and doing what he didn't do and what he should have done, and then the other officers that are standing by allowing it to happen, it sets us backwards. And we take 10, you know, we step backwards 10 years. And my hope is that, you know, the African American community specifically is seeing the way law enforcement is reacting to this. They're not saying, well, wait a second, this may have been excited delirium. You know what? Let's look at his criminal history, if he has any. Let's look at him and kind of take our attention away from the officer's failure. They're not doing that. Across the board and across the country, at least what I'm hearing everybody saying, that was wrong. That was wrong. That was wrong. That was wrong. And that does not represent me. And I think, if nothing else, that's a good launching point for us to be united, to yes. be united behind here and get the conversation truly started.
Chief, everyone saw what you did, and we've been discussing what you did, having those conversations with people out there in the streets there in Bellevue. After that and going forward, what are you going to take away from that moment, and how are you going to use that moment to continue to be of a good influence to the police officers on your staff there in Bellevue?
So first and foremost, I'm going to have a conversation with Raz. You know, I gave him my phone number, and we are going to connect. I've learned a lot over the last 5 years since I've been here. One of the first advisory councils I put together was the African American Advisory Council. And I'm an individual who, you know, I felt most of my life I've been an enlightened individual, because and I know this at times sounds almost like a cliche, but truly, you know, most of my friends were African Americans. And, you know, when I was a single man, before I found the love of my life, my wife, you know, I dated many different types of women. And I got to know cultures and everything else. But I didn't realize what I didn't realize until we put together the African American Advisory Council. And they're, you know, community leaders within Bellevue and such. And I, at the height, I think I had 20 members on there. And I remember the first time I heard one of my council members tell me, you know what, Chief, I have to have a conversation with my son. I remember the day I had to have the conversation with my son. I said, what conversation? What to do if you become come across a police officer? And I smile. My wife is of Mexican heritage. I said, yeah, I had that conversation with my son as well. And they just looked at me, and they said, probably for that same reason. And I said, okay, because my conversation with my son is, if you get in trouble with the law enforcement, you better do what they tell you to do. And I better not hear it from them. I better hear it from you, because you're gonna get in trouble. Their conversation was, don't move. Don't do this, because you're potentially going to get hurt. And they went into a little bit more graphic detail than what I'm saying. And I just, my mouth was open, and it was a growth opportunity at that moment for me. And then I was interviewed by Joyce Taylor. I think we had National Night Out going on, and she brought it up with tears in her eyes. And I got to tell you, that kills my heart that anybody would have to have any conversation with their son or daughter on how to interact with us, because they think that they're going to get hurt. They think they're going to get killed. And that was a pivot point for me. And moving forward from this, I think what I take away from this is when I looked in the eyes of the protesters, the legitimate protesters down there yesterday, young, hurt, dismayed, looking at me in my uniform as someone that they cannot rely on, somebody that is the enemy, I'm going to do everything in my power to change that. And fortunately for me, I do have a voice here locally in the state of Washington with the Washington State and Sheriff's Association, but I also have a voice at a national level with the International Associations of Chiefs of Police and the Police Executive Research Forum. And I have been using that voice. And there has been movement. And there's been a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes that the public and the communities may not know about, changing training, changing mindset, implicit bias, and recognizing that we're all carrying it wherever it comes from. It you know, can impact an interaction between people.
Chief Milet, we thank you. We thank your officers. We thank you for being so honest and open and sharing your heart. And we will continue to have these conversations with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ursula. Thank you, G.
Coming up next, we do good news and we have a conversation as to why I feel encouraged. This is G. Ursula Show. Welcome back into the G and Ursula Show. Happy Monday to all of you. Coming up next, we'll take your texts, your feedback, and then Ursula's words to live by. And Ursula, is usually time for good news.
It is. And instead of doing good news, we wanted to kind of switch it up this morning, G, because of, you know, everything that we've heard, everything that we saw over the weekend. And throughout the show today, we have been pointing out what's gone wrong and the history of racism in our country and what we have done wrong. But we want to give everybody, you know, a chance to understand, too, what is it that we can do individually? Because this is a time of self-reflection. And you had talked about why you have hope right now.
I do have hope. And I look at the conversations that are continuing right now across the country. I look at my emails that I get. I look at the messages that I get. I look at people that are hitting me up saying, I did not realize what I didn't realize. And having the police chief on our airwaves and listening to him and listening to him talk, and I ask him, what has he learned? And instead of answering, no, I didn't learn anything, the police chief of Bellevue got on here and he has learned something over the last 5 years and over the last few days. So it is encouraging. Sometimes when people listen to our show, if you walk away with, oh, you guys think all cops are bad and you think all white people
no
are
way.
Bad. If you listen to the G and Ursula Show and you think that, then I apologize. Then I need to do a better job of helping you. Do you understand that that is not the case? I'm encouraged also because of right now what's happening on the airwaves at Cairo. I don't know. You know better than me, right? How long has Cairo Radio been around, Ursula?
Over 80 years.
Okay, over 80 years. Mm-hmm. I wonder in the 80 years when there has been something like this, the L.A. riots, the Watts riots of 1965, the Newark, New Jersey riots of 1967, all of the different riots. I'm curious as to when Cairo Radio was able to have two minorities, a black man and an Asian woman on the radio to have a discussion about what we just saw and how we can get through with this. So when you start talking about the possibility of change, you have to also address what's right. Now, everybody looks at things different. I mean, I have people in my family. Every time I talk to them, the glass is always half empty. Every day. It doesn't matter what it is. Well, why are you complaining about having $2 in your pocket when your other pair of jeans have $500 in their pocket? They don't want to talk about the positive. They want to talk and address about the negative. So when I say I'm encouraged, I am encouraged because conversations that are happening, and I'm encouraged because there are a lot of people that are in places that know that we need to address the systems and policies throughout our country that need change. I'm encouraged.
And I'm encouraged because the kind of questions that we're getting include, you know, one listener said, I wish people were just blind so that they wouldn't see color. But actually, we want to see color. We want to see color and we want to embrace color and be okay to say words like in being inclusive or embracing our differences or, you know, fighting for justice. I mean, these are real things that you know, you can do. And how does that look? One of the stories I shared with you recently, G, was about my oldest son who went to UCLA for college. And I told you that there were 2 years where every single Monday, and this was not something that I asked him to do. This was something that he just felt compelled to do. And I asked him about that recently, like, why did you do that? And he went every Monday. He spent time mentoring students in a middle school in South Central LA. And he was put together with some young boys, middle school boys, who were mostly Latino, some African-American. And he said that he wanted to spend time volunteering there because he realizes how lucky he is. Yes, he has a mother of color, but he says, you know, frankly, I do have white privilege. And I saw an opportunity where I could try to show these young men that there are people who care for them, that they do have opportunities. I wanted to help show them what kind of opportunities they could have if they, you know, stayed on the right path and they, you know, wanted to do an education or wanted to pursue a higher education or, you know, go a different route. But I wanted to know that there is hope and there are people who care. He said, you know, was I the best equipped? Because someone asked him, well, you know, don't you think going into these communities of color, maybe it would be better if someone, you know, black or Latino were to do what you're doing? And he said, you know, maybe I didn't have all the tools, but at least I was able to show that I care.
Right.
And you told me at that when I shared that story with you, you were, you know, practically yelling like, oh, my God, thank you, because you feel like, you know, someone in his position has a voice that could potentially be more powerful.
Absolutely. I was so excited and encouraged when you did tell me that story is because I know the impact that your son can have. Look, Ursula, I'm on the radio every single day and people get to listen and hear what I say. But at the same time, I also get, you know, people that say, well, G's a racist and G's a race baiter. I know that's not the case, but here's the point. Your son can do more with his words and what he's doing than I can do. And that's why I made it such a big deal when you shared with me That story is just, it's big. It's unbelievable. And it's crazy because last week.
And he doesn't think it's big, by the way. I mean, he was just like, yeah, that's what, you know, we should be doing. You know, what is it we can do at some little level? You know, what some little thing that could have a big impact.
I'll continue more with my encouragement. Remember last week I shared with everyone my our email that I got from the person that admitted that he was racist.
Yes.
And you, of course, wrote a wonderful deal on that, talking about the denial being the heartbeat of racism. Well, he and I, we talk all day, every day now.
I love that.
All day, every day right now.
Seriously?
And you know what he's, every man, he'll hit me up after the show. And what he's talking about is how he's taking this conversation with his friends, and he's having his conversations with his kids. He shared with me a cool deal, and I don't have time for it right now, but he shared with me a cool Facebook post that his daughter had written. And so my point is that when people hit me up and say, gee, I don't understand why you're so encouraged. Let me tell you, not many people live a lifetime where they can say they've had known racists email them and tell them, I want to change and be better. If that ain't encouragement, I don't know what is. All right, coming up next, your texts, your feedback, and Ursula's words to live by. It's the G and Ursula Show. Welcome back here to the G and Ursula Show. It is now time for your texts, your feedback, and then Ursula's words to live by. This hour of the G and Ursula Show is brought to you by your local Carrier heating and air conditioning dealers. Ursula, you want to get us started with the text?
Sure. When it comes to scenarios, do you report your coworker to HR for race comments? 425 says, from working at multiple places and dealing with HR most of the time, when you go to HR, you are looked at as creating a problem. There is such a culture of normalcy to everything today. It is disgusting. And I do want to add to that. And when we talk about how people can learn and what institutions need to change, that also goes for HR departments. People need to be able to go to HR departments and feel like the HR department has your back, not the company's back only, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you need to be able to go to HR and know that your complaints are going to be listened to and handled properly.
Protest over the weekend, 253 says, gee, it is a handful of people that are starting the problems and instigating things, but the problem is a lot of the locals are following in their footsteps and joining the crowd.
425 says, the riots and looting were disgusting, and I have totally lost interest in what the protesters have to say. What happened to George Floyd was criminal, but I have been completely turned off. Can we address that real quick, G?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because right now when people say, you know what, you blew it, you've lost that ability to have your message heard because of what is happening right now, I say to those people, I don't think you were really wanting to listen. Because if that alone has turned you off at this point, we're in a world of hurt. And we're going to just look at those people who are willing to listen and hope that you will too, because nothing is going to change unless we're all willing to dig in and do that hard work.
Well, I want to continue on with that statement right there. They said, what happened to George Floyd was criminal, but now I've completely turned off. They agree that it was a small full of people around the country that have caused the looting and the violence. That same thing can be said when you start talking about police officers. When a small percentage of police officers do something bad, it can sometimes make so many have an entire opinion on the police force. This is why it is so important to continue to have these conversations so we can be very specific as to what we're talking about and the why we are talking about things. We'll move on to calls on how listeners have experienced racism. 509 says, G and Ursula, I'm a person of color and my wife is white. This past weekend, we visited her family and can feel the tension and awkwardness regarding the protests, riots. I know they're not racist, but do think that they are insensitive to these issues. I also work in an office where I am the only person of color. I hear the opinions that they really feel. I honestly don't know what could change their minds. I feel like they are lost cause, and the only hope is that our younger generations don't let up on this.
253 says, I grew up in Baltimore, and I got my butt kicked for being white almost on a daily basis.
425 says, I'm white. My life was threatened, stopping in a predominantly black town in the South for my skin color. I was mad at first and thought they were racist, but then thought why and what they must have experienced to act and feel this way.
Wow, that is huge because, that is someone who has experienced it, you know, in a different way and has kept an open mind. But we're going to continue to have these conversations. 253 says, my children are mixed race but look white. I've had people ask me why I gave them Hispanic names. When I explained that I am Puerto Rican, I've been told I don't look like it and neither do my kids. I've never said anything because I don't want to make a scene or come off as a stereotype, but I always want to tell these people their ignorance is showing.
This may be off topic, but good Lord, 425. Here's when I should have said something. I was at Walmart and the checkout person turned his head, pulled down his face mask and sneezed all over my groceries. This was 2 days ago. I should have said something, but I left and sanitized my groceries.
And real quick before we go to Words to Live By, one of the funniest things that I saw, what the heck was with that cheesecake? In the middle of the protest, person leaving with that cheesecake.
Hey, I tell you what, Ursula, I'm not going to lie. I told you, look, my life, I there's a lot of laughter in my life. And I got to tell you, out of all the things that was going on this weekend, that had me laughing. Yo, is she walking down the street with cheesecake? Oh, my God. All right, let's get to Words to Live By.
and our words to live by today come from our listener, Stacy. She said that she loves both of us, G. And she says, I love you. You're probably thinking, you don't even know me. And that is true. But if people can hate for no reason, I can love. And I just want to remind everybody, we do all have a role to play in bringing about change, and it starts with ourselves.
Ursula, thank you.
Thank you.
Great show. Chef?
You know, about those protests, we got some secret communication. Show exclusive about what's coming up.
Hidden Cheesecake Factory again. So amped.
Andrew?
Don't forget to wear sunscreen when you peacefully protest.
Very good words. Means words to listen to the show. Appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. Be good.